St. George's number one station with Washington County's top talk show, The Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Good morning, everybody. 909 on KDXU. Time for our monthly visit with the legendary Zach Renstrom. Hi, Zach. How you doing? I don't know if you're legendary yet. You're getting there, though. You're on your way.
Maybe to some people, but thanks. I appreciate it.
Ron Thompson would be legendary. You're kind of like halfway.
He's yeah. definite a legend.
Yes, definitely a legend. But your job lends to, I mean, we're joking around a little bit. Your job kind of lends to you have to look into the future and make sure we're going to be okay in the future. So if you're not legendary and you're in your job, then you're doing something wrong. Right.
Yeah, you could be infamous or legendary. I guess that's how history will determine that.
Yeah, well, in Three Amigos, infamous means more than famous, right? I don't think they understood that, but a silly old movie that I like. You like that? You
know, that movie? I every time I watch it, I just laugh the entire time. And
when they're singing that "Blue Shadows on the Trail" and the horses chimes in and some boom, That's good stuff. Anyway, Zach, thanks for coming in. We digress a little bit. But got to see Zach a couple of weeks ago as we both were in the same group touring the new St. George remodel and the St. George Temple. Yeah. It was a pretty awesome experience.
Yeah, it was really fun. I got to meet your father, and he's a very, very nice, wonderful man. And
good guy.
I've met your wife before, but it was fun to actually spend some time with her, and she also seems very sweet.
She is. She's awesome. In fact, before we went on the air, we were both talking about our wives. And, honey, it was nothing but nice stuff
for
Zach and I. We were both talking very highly of our better halves. We both married up. We know that.
And today's actually my wife's 50th birthday, too.
Really? Happy birthday. What's her name?
Allison.
Happy birthday, Allison. I don't know that she's probably real happy that you announced she's 50 on the radio, but she doesn't care.
No.
She looks great.
Yeah.
She does. She looks fantastic. So I guess it's okay to be 50 if you look like you're 30, right?
Well, yeah. She's still active. I mean, right now she's teaching PE, and I bet you she's running around the track with a bunch of students right now. So she's doing well.
She's in better shape than most of those students, probably.
Yeah. Well, she has contests. She's like, if you beat me, then you get to go, something. Huh. And so she'll actually race them.
Really?
Yeah.
What school is this?
Snow Canyon Middle.
Very cool. The Scorpions or something like that? Or they used to be the Scorpions. I don't know what they are now.
The Warriors.
Warriors.
Yeah.
Oh, because they adopted. Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Cool. Well, Zach, last week, I think it was last week on the news, the Apple Valley came across and said, it turns out our water tank is empty, and we're not sure why, and we miss it because our floater or whatever, our gauge is broken, and, we obviously reported on what they told us, but we were kind of both sitting there going, how does this happen? As a water guy, this is right up your alley. Can you explain, can you shed light a little bit more on that?
Yeah, so it just wasn't one failure. It was multiple failures that were going on.
Okay.
And they have a newer staff person that's still trying to learn the system. And so it's their system's independent. They have a special service district that runs that system. We got notified fairly quickly that their tank was emptying, taps were dry. And so the water district, we quickly mobilized. We sent trucks up there. St. George City was wonderful. They provided a water truck for us to start hauling water to get water into that tank. And so our first response was just immediate emergency. The Washington County Emergency Center was excellent, too. They started bringing up bottled water for people to come pick it up. So it's just right there. So then we started looking into what caused the problem. So they have three primary wells, and they thought the wells were running and just sucking air. And so you start looking into that. One of the wells had a mechanical issue going on that needed to be fixed. And so they had to get the parts for all that in response. The one well, from what we can tell, actually did go dry. And the other well had, after you run a well for a while, they actually start to get, for lack of a better word, hard water build up and other things going on.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so you have to chemically treat those and kind of flush those wells out to kind of break up that hard water and other things in there. And so that was kind of what's going on with the other one. So we were able to get in there, get two of their wells, at least one well working fairly well. and actually get water back into the system. The tough thing is when you have an event like that and drains the system, you're always worried now about contamination. And so we quickly took a bunch of bacteria samples to see what's going on. I still believe they're under a boil order notice. Most people, though, are just actually coming and picking up the bottled water and stuff like that. And so hopefully today they'll be able to remove that. But it really was a series of things that happened. Like with our system, like they had one sensor on their tank. And on our tanks, we have two. And even with the two, then we still have emergency sensors and stuff like that. And so their system wasn't quite as robust as like our systems are. So we're working with them. We're working with the Division of Drinking Water. They need a lot of money to get their system up to what I would say is acceptable.
Okay.
So
the tank, how I guess you have to refill the tank at this point now, right? So how hard and how long is that going to take?
So it's filling up right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends a little bit on demand and how fast that pump can go. And so the pump is putting water into the system. So now we just need people to kind of hold off or limit the amount of water they're using until that tank gets full. No, I shouldn't say full, but actually get a reserve in there, especially for fire flow. That's one of our big concerns. Is,
well, yeah, if there's a fire in Apple Valley right now.
Yeah, and they actually did have a small little shed catch on fire. And luckily the fire trucks actually carry a little bit of water in them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to put that shed fire out. But that's my biggest concern right now, is to make sure that they get that fire flow. And I haven't got the numbers back yet today. So they may be back. I just haven't heard it yet today. But as of last night, they felt comfortable where it was trending.
Have you heard a lot from the Apple Valley residents themselves? Are people angry? Are they patient? Are they upset? Are they, what's the citizens? How are the citizens out there?
Yes, they're all those.
All those, okay.
It depends on who you talk to. One thing is, it seems like most people, it's very fair, they want to say what happened, what's going on, and yeah, how's this going to be fixed moving forward, which is a really, that's a good question. That's what should be being asked right mm-hmm. now. The mayor, to his credit, he was out there helping fill water buckets. He was out there, like he was calling me. I spoke to him several times. He was talking to my staff a lot, and so he was out there. He actually has he reached out, and there's some people that have their own personal wells, and he worked it out where they were trying to connect it to the system to kind of help out and do things like that. And so he's been very active, but there is a lot of frustration. Like when I often say, when I'm doing my job is when you don't think about my job,
right? Like an offensive lineman.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I remember.
Okay.
The only time they think about you is when you screw up.
Yeah, and they get sacked. So it's kind of the same thing. And so we want people to wake up. We want them to turn on their water and not even think about it. We want them to not even think about, is the water safe to drink or not? We just want them to know, yeah, it's safe to drink. And so now we got to go in. And so in my opinion, in doing preliminary analysis, there's going to be a significant investment in infrastructure that's going to be required up there in Apple Valley.
Do you know where that money will come from? Is that,
well,
they're going to have a special bond?
It's too early. So there are grants that they can apply for. I know the Division of Drinking Water has some funds that they can help out. And so we're kind of going through that process of, okay, how much money can we get from the state? And then where can we use it? It's going to take a lot.
Okay. And the next question for me is, okay, I live in Middleton. I have friends that live in Washington and Herc. Could this happen elsewhere? And if so, do we need to do some things so it doesn't?
So if you're connected to one of the main cities down here, we have a much more robust system. So let's say I had a well that went offline. You would never notice, because we actually have wells that'll go down all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But because we have a more robust system, it's a bigger system, so we can adapt to it. If we had a tank completely go offline, we could adapt to that. And it actually happens quite a bit, and people don't even notice it. Also, we have what we call it SCADA, but it's basically the computers are monitoring it. And so we'll get signals certain things are happening a lot faster than they did up in Apple Valley. So just because of the connectivity of the system down here, for an area of town to go out of water, it's a much rarer event. I'm not going to say it could never happen, But it would, it's, we just have, it's just more robust to handle those situations.
But in Apple Valley, there wasn't one event then that drained the tank, that, you know, the earthquake or anything like that. It, it just was a series of unfortunate events.
Yeah, it, yeah, you could say that.
Okay, okay. And that's all Zach can say right now.
Well, until we have the full investigation of what actually was going on, what happened to this well, like, why did this one well go dry? Until that is all over, I'm kind of holding back what my opinion is on until I see the final thing. So,
does it have anything to do whatsoever with the drought we've been in for the last however many years?
So, even though, like, this year has been a very wet year, it's been a great year, and our reservoirs are full and our streams are full, the aquifer, for that water to get to the aquifer, sometimes takes 10, 20, 30 years.
Hmm.
And so up in that aquifer that they're up, it's, it sits up on top of the mountain. And so, and even our other aquifers down here, we haven't seen the big recharge that we have seen in our reservoirs this year, but we know it'll just take time. And so the water that you're pumping out of a pump, best case scenario, that water fell maybe 5 years ago. And so I do think there is a really serious question of, have they been pumping that aquifer too hard up there? And have they, are they, well, we use the term mining the aquifer, meaning it's not being recharged as much as it's being drawn out. And I think that's a serious question that needs to be addressed up there.
Mm, wow. So many layers of complexity to your job, Zach. It's like, don't even think about it. I mean, you said Division of Drinking Water. Is that what you said a little while ago? I didn't even know there was such a thing as the Division of Drinking. This is a federal agency, or?
No, this is, that's a state agency.
A state agency.
Yeah, so they're under the Department of Environmental Quality. And so the Division of Drinking Water, they basically go out and make sure that the public water systems within the state of Utah are safe. And so they come every year and they do inspections. They go out and you look at your wells and your water tank. If we change the, say, the design of our water treatment plant, we actually have to submit plans to them and they will actually review it and make sure it complies. We have to send up our water samples to them. So we'll go out and test for a bunch of stuff. And then we actually send those results to them. And they have requirements that they go through. And so for the most part, the Department of the Department Division of Drinking Water, they've actually been really excellent to work with. They've got some really highly qualified individuals up there that we work with closely, and it's actually a really good partnership.
The DDW, Division of Drinking Water? Yeah, DDW.
Yeah.
There you go. There was two words that come to mind when I think about your job and what you do, and fragile. I guess you want to stay away from fragile and redundancy, and that's the word you used to use a lot when you were on, you know, last year, was redundancy, meaning you have a backup plan. Well, you talk about those two words because we don't want to think that our water system and our drinking water is fragile at all.
Yeah. It is, and we spend a lot of time and effort doing emergency preparedness and planning on what certain scenarios and what could happen and how we'd respond to that. Fortunately, we have great cities here that also work with us very closely on what we would do, and so we kind of talk about, well, if this happened, how would we respond, and how would the cities respond, and how, like, could St. George City flip on a bunch more wells so we could supplement Ivins with additional water if there was an incident or a water break and stuff like that? And so we do spend a lot of time with that, but we know that our system is fragile. Like, if an earthquake came through, we know the water system would be one of the entities that would be struck the hardest and take the longest to get back up to where we need to go.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of drinking water that we have today would only last, like, if we shut off all our wells and all our the water treatment plant, we would only have enough drinking water to last maybe not even a day, maybe half
wow.
a day. So
maybe if we cut back, we could last 2 days, maybe.
If everybody shut off their sprinklers and everything, you could probably last maybe 2 days. And so it's a system where it's kind of delivered on demand. Our reservoirs, if our reservoirs are completely full, we would have safe drinking water for maybe about a year, year and a half, if we didn't get any precipitation. And so we're kind of always thinking about these issues of how to keep the system reliable. And sometimes we run extra pipes for the sole fact of we just need some redundancy in the system, that if this pipe goes bad, we need that. And so we'll actually go out and do analysis of risk and saying, okay, if this pipe goes bad, that's the sole supply of water for this area, and that's not acceptable. So let's figure out how to run another pipe.
Backup pipe. Mm-hmm. Redundancy pipe.
Redundancy, yeah. And these are millions of dollar projects. Like, this is not just like, oh, you know, let's have like some, you know, 50 buck item here. These are multi-million dollar projects, and we spend a lot of time is this redundancy worth spending $5 million?
And that's actually what I was going to ask next. How do you justify the cost versus the redundancy need? Are there maybe officials who are too careful and too cautious and want too much redundancy? I mean, there's got to be a balance there, right, to fit it all in cost-wise.
Yeah, so right now we're drilling a well, and the purpose of this well is solely for redundancy. And the well is going to cost about $2.5 million to drill.
Wow.
And the reason why we drilled that is we looked at, okay, if one of these wells go down, how long will it take us to get it back online? And so we averaged maybe like 5 days. And then we like, okay, if we look at our water storage, and let's say the tank was only 50% full, like what would happen in that scenario? How would we respond to that situation? And we realized within hours we would be in a critical situation. And so we're like, that's not acceptable. Let's go and spend the $2.5 million to drill the additional well to have that safety caution put in there. And in addition, we also build a 3 million gallon water tank to make sure that we would have even more buffer in that situation. And so we just sit down with the engineers and kind of go through it and talk about it.
And you have some engineering background?
I'm a licensed civil engineer. So I went to the University of Utah.
And you're a lawyer too, right?
I'm licensed in the state of Utah to practice law.
Okay.
And I'm a licensed civil engineer.
How long did you go to school?
Nah, 9 years.
Yeah. Wow. I went to college 5 years and only got one degree. So
I loved school. So did you? Okay. In fact, when I got done with my law degree, I went to my wife and I said, "Hey, I really want to go get a degree in chemistry." And she looked at me, she's like, "Buddy, listen.
Enough.
I want a house. I want a mortgage. I want you to get a real job." And it was fair. She was very supportive of me and my schooling. And so I was like, yeah, you're right.
It actually sounds very familiar. I told my wife at one point I was going to go back to school. She said, "No, you're not." Oh, okay. I guess I'm not.
Yeah. So. I really do love school. Like, I loved the university experience too. And I think it's changed, though. And that's kind of sad. But that's a whole other show.
Well, you know, one of the things that you mentioned as you were talking about it, I think about this current generation, maybe not so much in southern Utah, but there's a lot of young people in this country that have never had to even think about water. Mm-hmm. You know, never had to, where it comes from, whether it's clean or not, or it just is. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're younger, and if you're a little bit older, I mean, we remember the times when you didn't take water for granted. And even if you go camping, you know how to boil water. You had those little tablets that you would put the water so you could drink it. It still tasted terrible, but you did it. So I don't know. Do you think there's education needed for this younger generation coming up who stares at their phone all day? Or,
you know, I think with a lot of things, I mean, this younger generations, they just, I mean, I don't want to be like this old mean guy, like the old grumpy, you kids don't understand.
Curmudgeon.
Yeah, because I know my uncles would always say, "You don't know how hard we had it," and silly things. But on the house I grew up with, you know, we would go without power for like 3 days. It was on the end of a line or something. And so it would go off. And as a kids, we knew exactly what to do. It was always in the winter. We'd take everything in the refrigerator. We'd take it outside, put it in the snow.
Wow.
We'd get the wood burning stove going. My mom would cook on the wood burning stove. And then, you know, maybe a day later, the power would come on. And my kids have never been without power for more than like maybe a half hour ish.
I can't even remember the last time the power went out at my house. I know what you're talking about. But
So I think we just take a lot of things for granted, and fortunately, we live in a wonderful place where we can take certain things for granted.
And that's so funny, because your job is, if we take water for granted, then you did your job.
Yep.
And if we don't, then you're not doing your job. And,
yeah.
Yeah, and I compared it to an offensive lineman, or in football, the long snappers, the guy that snaps the ball to the field goal holder or the punter. Uh-huh. Those guys get no credit. But if you have a bad one who's always making a bad snap, that you notice right away.
Yeah.
So that's our football analogy for you. All right, we've got a weather break coming up here in just a second. A couple of things I wanted to talk about when we come back. You mentioned reservoirs. Where are we at on reservoirs? I had a guy on, McCray Hepler. I don't know if you watched any of McCray Hepler's videos about what's coming up in St. George. Talked about a reservoir maybe out off Exit 2, out that way. Is that, I don't know. We'll look into that. Zach's like, maybe a little, I don't know. We'll look into that. And certainly they're going to need water down at that south part of town. Also we'll look into where we're at on the much ballyhooed and much talked about for decades now, Warner Valley Reservoir. Will it ever happen? So
okay.
We'll talk about that when we come back.
Sounds good.
It is 9:30 on KDXU. Zach Renstrom, Washington County Water Conservancy District superstar, is here. We'll be right back.
Compelling guests, hot topics, the latest news. Always on the Andy Griffin Show.
Is there a juicy part in it for me?
Right here on News Radio 890. 92.5 KDXU. Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Hey, good morning. 9:35 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Thanks for tuning in. We've got our monthly visit with Zach Wrench from Something Missing today, though. Carrie Rapji, who does not go on the air very often, but she's usually here to keep an eye on Zach, make sure he doesn't say anything he's not supposed to or something, or send him texts and tell him that he forgot something or whatever. She's not here.
No, she's at a conference today, so yeah. I think it's Colorado where she's at. But
we miss Carrie. Yeah.
I will tell you, she will listen to this show tonight. Okay. And she'll send me a text tonight saying, Zach, you missed this point, this point, this point. You shouldn't have said that. Yes. But it's great.
How long has Carrie been public relations communications director there?
Over 10 years.
Wow, really? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I was going to say, I'll take her job when she leaves, but it doesn't sound like she's leaving anytime soon.
I hope not. She does a good job.
She does do a fantastic job. Yeah, it's funny because sometimes I'll tell her we're going to turn on her mic this time, and she's always, no, I don't want to talk on the radio. And then every once in a while, you go out of town, and you make her talk on the radio. So that's good.
Yeah,
that's good. Let's talk reservoirs a little bit, if you're okay with that.
Yeah, of course.
Let's start with the legendary Warner Valley Reservoir. How long have people been talking about putting a reservoir out there?
So it was interesting. I was reading a congressional record in the 70s where they were talking about Warner Valley.
You really are a nerd, by the way, if you were reading a congressional record.
I actually find it quite interesting. But there was a lady that testified that they were going to build Warner Valley and then Japan bombed Pearl Harbor and it got put on hold.
In 1941?
So, yeah, and so it was, they were kind of looking at, you know, and during the Great Depression they were building a lot of these projects, and so that was on, according to this person that testified, that they were going to build it and then it got put on hold. And so in the 70s, early 80s, there was also another permit issued for it, and they were hoping to get funding from Congress, and that didn't come through, so they put it on hold again. So now where we're at is the Water District has purchased all the land from the CITLA, from the state of Utah, and now we're in the process of doing a land exchange. So Congress has told the BLM that they're supposed to go get some critical habitat for the tortoises. And so we're doing a land exchange. So there's a private owner of that land. And so we're going to do like kind of a three-way swap where the landowner will get a chunk of money. The BLM will get that critical habitat for the tortoises, and we'll get the Warner Valley. And so right now we're in the environmental review process. So,
oh, boy, we love those.
Yeah, but we've actually – so we're 7 years into that land swap, but I do see good progress moving forward on it. So I would hope – I can't guarantee, but I would hope that within about a year the district would actually own that property right out. Then at that point, we would do the analysis of when is it economically feasible to bring it online with the projects that would be associated with it. So I think it will definitely get built during my career, but I wouldn't say you're not going to see dirt moving out there like in the next, for sure, for the next couple of years.
You're how old, Zach? 50?
I'm 50, yeah.
50?
Yeah.
So you say during your career, we're talking about in the next 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, ish.
Ish. Oh, I hate that, ish.
It depends on how fast, I mean, if growth slows down, we're not going to build it just to have it sit there. Like, we're assuming that certain growth patterns will occur.
But we kind of blew away any growth pattern ideas in the last 3 years.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's why I think we will build it in my career. I want to get that thing built.
It's been talked about for so long. I know that people that have been here a long time are like, yeah, right. You know,
yeah.
It's never going to happen. Yeah.
So we are closer now than we've ever been because we're in the process of actually owning the land. I'm getting the funding all set up, and so we have a funding mechanism to pay for it now. And now it will come down to demand, and then the environmental review process.
And maybe in the next decade or so, we'll have out that way, we'll have ourselves a nice lake.
Yeah, Warner Valley would be. It's going to be a ski lake.
Yeah,
people go water skiing on it. There'll be some great camping around it, I'm sure. I think it'll turn into similar like Sand Hollow. Where the recreation that occurs on Sand Hollow is, you know, it's the number one state park, and I can see Warner Valley equaling that very easily.
That would be cool.
That'd be good fishing, too.
Let's go to the phone lines. Don is calling in about a reservoir in Santa Clara. Is that right, Don?
That's correct. Don from Santa Clara. I'm just curious about I'm not sure what they're going to name it. Was it the Cemetery Lake or something?
Graveyard.
Graveyard Wash?
Yeah.
Unfortunate name. I wish we could do something about that. But I was more curious about timelines on when and if that might be happening.
Yeah, so over on that side of town, there was an environmental review process that was done about 20 years ago, and they identified two sites out there. One is called Dry Wash. That's a little bit closer. Well, it's actually located in Ivins, a little bit closer to Ivins Reservoir and Graveyard. With Graveyard, both sets of plans are about 90% completed. When they reached out to the BLM saying, hey, we're going to build this reservoir, the BLM says, well, let us hurry and go look at that one more time. I mean, they looked at it 20 years ago, but they says, let's look at it again. They went out there, and a tortoise had apparently walked across the site. And so that kicked us into a whole new process, getting U.S. Fish and Wildlife involved. And so we're just in the process of trying to figure out the mitigation for that. And so hopefully...
Well, side tangent on that one. We're talking about the Mojave Desert tortoise, correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The one that's not indigenous to Utah at all.
That's the one.
The one that, you know, because years ago when some of the settlers came down here, they brought other game in here, rabbits, some other types of deer, and some other animals that didn't exist here. And somebody thought it'd be kind of cute to have some tortoises roaming around. So they brought some tortoise from the Mojave Desert in Arizona out to this area. And so now somehow the BLM uses that as a cudgel to lock up, you know, mass swaths of land that we can no longer use or develop or recreate on because somehow it's going to be an endangering a non-indigenous tortoise. Am I correct?
Yes. For lack of a better word, yeah.
I want to make sure I had the point of reference right.
No.
But as far as timeline of this lake actually happening, we're talking 5, 10, 20 years maybe.
Well, that's kind of what we're working on. So right now, in my opinion, we should be able to build that thing within next year. But I can't speak for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, what they might come out with. We've already agreed that we will go out and buy land to mitigate the tortoise thing. There's some man-made created wetlands that we're going to have to mitigate, and we have some land that we've already set aside for mitigation for that. And so on our side, we've come to the table and say, hey, even though we don't necessarily agree with it, we will go ahead and mitigate the wetlands, the tortoise issue, and all these other things. Give us the permit. And they're saying, we'll get back to you. So,
yeah. Well, again, Zach, I want to thank you for your time, your effort, and your patience on how you deal with this thing, because I don't have that ability. You possess that kind of strength I just don't have.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about, Don. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you, guys.
Frustrating. And you've actually expressed it a couple of times on this show over the last couple of years is the frustration of we're ready to go. You know, it's like, I'm going to make the comparison. Suppose your wife is ready for you to leave and you're still on the couch with the remote in your hand and you don't have any shoes on and you haven't put a tie on yet. And, It's that kind of thing. She's ready to go. And I purposely did that backwards because in a lot of houses it's the other way around. But anyway, you know, it's like everything's ready. Let's go right now. Yeah. And then they tell you, well, you know, there's turtle tracks and let's build a little mini fence. And can you give us some more land for Mr. Tortoise? And
Yeah. It's just part of the process. And it's something that... Well, I won't get in my soapbox, but okay. We definitely need to change the environmental laws within the United States. And I'm not, I am a person that feels very strongly about protecting and being good stewards of the land. I think we have to do that. But some of the stuff that's going on, we're wasting literally millions and millions and millions of dollars on something that does nothing to help anyone.
Yeah.
Or plants or birds or fish.
Yeah, good point. Good point. About the graveyard wash. Now, I've many times made fun of that name and how it needs to be changed and everything. Is there, and I'm not familiar with the area there, is there literally a graveyard there when they call it graveyard wash? So if we put a reservoir there, would you be washing up graves or
no,
anything? No.
No. This is, because I've asked about the name. I'm like, where did this name come from? And I was told that the pioneers, let's say they had a horse or a cow that died or whatever, they would drag that animal out there to let the coyotes kind of come and pick the bones.
Okay.
And so there was kind of, you know, a stack of like just dead carcasses there. And so that's how it got its name.
Okay.
That's what I was told. I mean, somebody could probably call in and say, no, that's not why. But that's why I was told. Hmm. So Carrie hates the name. She wants to change it. I don't really care. Like, come on. I got bigger things to worry about.
Zach, I know it doesn't matter in the eternal scheme of things, but swimming in a reservoir named graveyard just doesn't seem like a good idea to me.
Yeah.
I mean, the first time someone dies in a reservoir, well, you should have known. It's called Graveyard Wash. You name it Happy Wash or Cheerful Wash.
I was pushing the name Rosenberg.
Well, now the mayor might like that.
No, he didn't. He was like,
what? He didn't like it?
Oh, no. He was like, absolutely not. I don't want that. And I was like, Rick, that, you know, let's name it Rosenberg. I thought it was good, but he didn't like that at all. So,
see, a lot of Hafens out there, right? Esplins.
Hafen Reservoir would be a good one. We're actually buying land from the Hafen family for the reservoir, so maybe that's a good way to recognize that family.
We've solved a problem today. No more graveyard wash. Hafen Reservoir. I like it.
All right.
Didn't get to ask you about that other reservoir, so we'll do that in a minute. Okay. Is there going to be a reservoir down there on the south southern corridor when we come back? Hey, I did want to thank Modern Warriors, a new sponsor on KDXU. Modern Warriors, you know, there's a lot of people, I'm one of them, that believes you need some personal protection in your life. Modern Warriors, these guys are experts. They have all kinds of firearms, and they take the time to sit and explain to you what it's all about and everything. If you haven't been in to see their place, it's pretty awesome. It's right off the Bloomington exit on the east side over there by behind the La Quinta. There's like a little shopping plaza back there with AWP, and it's kind of a cool little location over there. Modern Warriors is AG approved, and Zach Renstrom is also AG approved. He's here on the show today. Zach, thanks for coming in again. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
A lot of growth. McCray Hepler was on, talked about the tremendous amount of growth that's going to be happening off of Exit 2, Desert Color, Desert Canyon, Desert, whatever they are out. And, I mean, there's going to be stores and restaurants and businesses. And I think Aria or something like that is a new development out there. It's going to have something like 2 million square feet of buildings. Mm-hmm. That they need water out there.
Yep.
I mean, duh, of course. So where are they going to get their water?
So they're going to get their water from two sources. So a lot of their water will actually be coming from Sand Hollow. So we built a water treatment plant out there by Sand Hollow Reservoir, and we also installed a large pipeline that goes through Warner Valley to take water out to that area of town. So that's where their drinking water will come from, is basically from Sand Hollow.
Okay.
But we also out there are starting to look at reuse and secondary water. And so they're developing a lot of secondary systems. And so the homes out there or the businesses will have 2 meters. They're going to have your traditional meter for culinary, and then they're going to have a purple meter.
Okay.
And that water can only be used for outside irrigation.
So you don't want to be drinking that.
You don't want to drink it. Yeah, I mean, you could play in it. You can run through it. It's safe for human contact. But, yeah, you wouldn't want to drink it. And so that's what they're really – St. George has done a really good job, and the developers have been really good and proactive about doing all that in that area of the town, and we're going to just expand that to make sure they have water.
It seems like, and maybe we didn't have the technology, but it seems like we needed that kind of second meter a while ago. And I mean, I'm glad it's coming to fruition now, but that seems like right now I'm going, well, yeah, that's we should have that.
Yeah, throughout the state of Utah, so our legislature allocated hundreds of millions of dollars to go and start retrofitting, installing these secondary meters. There has been some water quality issues that made it a little tricky to install those meters.
Mm-hmm.
But in that area of town, their secondary water will be crystal clear, and so it would be easy to monitor that water.
Okay. Is there any plans? Will there be a reservoir out that way somewhere eventually?
There won't be a reservoir. There'll be some ponds. Okay. Kind of like if you go along Snow Canyon Parkway, they have like a little pond.
Mm-hmm.
So those ponds will be used for, well, you know, just recreation for people to walk around, but it'll really be used to allow that secondary water system to be used, because we have to store that water to allow for peak flows. And so there, I think there's like three small little ponds like that, but they're functional ponds, but there will be some recreation around it. But I wouldn't call it a reservoir. I'd call it more of a pond.
Okay. And you said Warner Valley, when it comes online, will have a fish. I caught that right before we went to a commercial break. And fishing, you said. I am not a fisherman, but I have some good friends who, just to them, they couldn't think of a better way to spend a few hours than with the line in the water.
So hopefully it's going to be a deep reservoir. Like we haven't got the exact depth. So like Sand Hollow is only about 100 feet deep. The water's quite warm. But with Warner Valley, and I'm not a fisherman, I should clarify.
Okay.
But we'll have deeper water there and cooler water there at the very base of the dam. And so from what I've been told is that would be a good environment for certain fish in that area. So we'll see.
Do we know what kind of, are we talking about trout or brown trout or pike or bass? Or
that's where you got to ask a fisherman. Well, Mayor Rosenberg is a big time fisher.
He knows his stuff.
So next time he comes on, you ask him what kind of fish I should plant in that reservoir.
For many years, Rick wrote for the magazine accompanying Sportsman's Warehouse.
Oh.
And they would actually pay for him to go. He'd been to like Alaska and Wisconsin and Texas and all over the place to write a story about a certain hunt or a certain fish or whatever. So, smart guy.
Yeah. So he'd be the one to tell me.
Okay. I was going to ask you, too, about, now it slipped my mind, and that happens sometimes when you're old like me. You forget. I should have written it down, but
it's okay.
Know, help me out, Zach. Can you read my mind?
Well, I think you're going to talk about how this was the wettest year ever recorded in Washington, in St. George, Utah.
Yeah, 15, coming into, like, this was a week ago, 15.79 inches.
Yeah.
We averaged like 8.5 a year.
Yeah.
So almost double.
Yeah.
Water, and the water year ends this week, right?
Yeah, October 1st.
Yeah.
Is when it starts again.
So it goes October to September, and it's actually supposed to rain this weekend right before
I know
the new water year.
So my career, we've gone from the driest. So we went 155 days without any measurable rainfall. Astronomically dry.
I think you were on the show like 4 or 5 times during that drought.
Because we could see it, and it was stressful. Then, so in my short career, we've gone from these records, dry periods, to now the wettest. And that's one of the reasons why we have to have these big, large dams to account for those dry years and those wet years. And so right now, if I would have had Warner Valley built, I would have completely full. That would have been full all the way. Every reservoir I would have, they all would have been topped off completely full and would have been 90% full going into the next year. And that's why we need that big projects to make sure that when we have that next drought that comes along, that we have the water we need.
Climate changes. We have droughts. We have wet years like we're having right now. I had heard rumors, Zach, and maybe you can address it. I know you're not a meteorologist, but that it's supposed to be La Nina or something, a wet winter.
You know, I know it gives us the reports every month and it gives us these updates. I don't know how much to trust those because I think the 5-day, 10-day forecast is
already a stretch.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I hope it's a wet year. Like I can tell you we've been in a wet pattern and I hope that continues for the next while. I talked to a farmer he's 80 years old, and he says, Zach, I'm 80 years old and we have dry spells and we have wet spells and we're going into a wet spell, so enjoy it while it lasts. And so I probably trust that old farmer more than I trust some report that spit it off from some computer.
Years ago, my dad was a television weatherman in Texas, and he went on the air. Like every year, he would do this. He'd take the old farmer's almanac, and he'd go on the air, and he'd read a little bit out of it, and then he would throw it over his shoulder. He'd say, that's what that's worth. And I guess some of the old farmers behind the old farmer almanac did not appreciate that.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
So, but there's a difference between climatology and meteorology, and climatology is a study of what's happened in the past and the patterns and what then, you know, logically would happen in current times. And you can't dismiss that.
Right.
I mean, you know, like the old farmer said, we had dry times, now we're entering a wet time. But by the same token, you've got your modern technology and you've got to figure out what's really happening right now.
Yeah.
So... And to mitigate that, we need reservoirs. We need places to store some of this water.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, I get hopeful about Warner Valley. We've been talking about it on this show for 4 years. You said they were talking about it in World War II, you know, mm-hmm. 80 years ago. And so when you say, well, within my career, I hope, and I'm like, oh, here we go. It's never going to happen. That's what it feels like.
Well, I'd say we're closer. I mean... Besides a war going on, I really think we'll get it built.
Okay.
So I'm feeling very positive about that.
Oh, real quick, Tocqueville, how close is Tocqueville to actually being a real reservoir?
So we have, we just actually put out the bid, we awarded the bid to start the foundation of that dam. And so you'll start seeing, we're building all the pipeline. So if you drive up I-15, you'll see all that pipe. But the dam itself, you're actually going to start seeing construction right on the dam site here shortly.
Nice, nice. Yeah. And for those folks who don't know, Ash Creek, I think, was the name of the little natural reservoir that would lose water all the time. This is a way to kind of retain some of that water a little bit down the hill.
Yeah,
that's right by New Harmony there.
Yeah, so that reservoir, it's a man-made reservoir, but it was a very they basically built I-15 and created a reservoir. So we're going to bring all that water down to a better site that can hold the water and then better utilize that water right there in Tocqueville.
Any other projects, big projects going on right now that we need to know about? Got a minute left.
Okay. No, thanks. So we actually have set, so for our 20-year plan to make sure our community has water for 20 years, we went through and identified all the projects, and there were over 100 different projects that we're going to have to complete. And so it goes from tanks, wells, dams, pipelines, and all that. And so, but we're going to get it done. We don't have a choice.
Yeah, we have to. Otherwise, water runs out, and then I guess it was slow growth. There was no water left, but that's not necessarily the thing we want. Can you believe, Zach, St. George over 100,000, Washington County over 200,000 now?
I believe it.
It's crazy.
It's a great place to live.
It is a great place. We are very lucky.
Yep.
And hopefully, every time we turn on the tap, the water will come out. That's Zach's goal, right?
It's my job.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Hey, Zach Renstrom on the Andy Griffin Show. I'm Andy. Tomorrow could be interesting. Mayor Nanette Billings is out of town. I think she had arranged for someone else to come in, but she hasn't told me who that is yet, and she's up on the mountain now. So we'll have somebody for you tomorrow, promise.